Hi, and good afternoon. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Johnson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and I'm actually not sure if I'll be here much longer, Adam, because I got my draft notice for the Space Police, and...
That's Space Force.
Space Force?
Space Force.
Space Police Force?
I don't think there's a police in
Space
it.
Space Force.
It's Space Force.
It's got to be cops.
Space cops.
I can go to the States, buy police boots, scuff them up, come back here, and then, anyway.
Oh my goodness, so much to unpack.
It's unreal.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today we're going to talk about legalized pot. Smoke them if you got them, maybe in a couple months. October 17th is going to be the day, but we'll see what happens. There's a lot of details to work out, but pot is going to be legal thanks to the Senate. And then Doug Ford has gotten down to business, and that business is ditching cap and trade, canceling all those fat government books. Perks like cookies at meetings and newspapers. And we'll talk about all that nickel and diming. And then finally, much seriously, the deaths of pedestrians and cyclists in Toronto on the roads there has reached nearly 100 after 2 years after John Tory promised Vision Zero. So why isn't this considered more of a crisis? And speaking of crises, we're going to kick off today talking about the child separation crisis on the U.S.-Mexican border. And we should all thank Donald Trump for, you know, ending the policy. He said he couldn't because it was a crisis he created, even though he said it was a law that the Democrats did. Even though they haven't been in power to pass laws for 8 years. It's kind of messed up.
Yeah, the lies just keep stacking up. I think that there's a fact checker slash lie checker on Trump, and it's clocked 3,000, I think, since inauguration in terms of things that he just says, like this law, the law. It's a policy. It's his policy that was responsible for the children of migrants being removed, wrenched from the parents in many cases by the looks of it. And of course, everybody, I think when we started off thinking about talking about this story, it was still a story, but it wasn't as massive as it has become. You know, the kids under the tinfoil blankets and just heartbreaking pictures. So as of yesterday, it's changed. It just happened to be World Refugee Day yesterday. I don't know. That's just one heck of a coincidence.
That's a pretty big coincidence, but it's a coincidence.
But
and nobody in the Trump White House cares about World Refugee Day.
No. And then you say to yourself, what does it take to make Trump backtrack? And I think it may have been, my guess would be, either Ivanka or Melania, who had that big faux pas today. I just saw it briefly before airtime where she wore some sort of weird jacket to go visit the migrant kids. Like, I don't give a hoot or something. What did it say? Do you remember?
I didn't know. I haven't seen that. I saw her visiting one of the resettlement facilities. Honestly, if Melania Trump wearing the wrong jacket is the worst thing that happens in Trump world this week.
No, but it wasn't just that it was a fashion faux pas. It actually had a slogan on the back. It said, and I've just looked it up here, "I really don't care, do you?" Like, of all the things to wear, she's normally a well-put-together, dressed woman, and yet somehow she chooses that? It's weird.
Again, I mean, on the list of Trump offenses in a week.
And at least she made a point of going to visit. So I think there may be some
In terms of slights, that's underneath the Secretary of Homeland Security going to a Mexican restaurant.
And getting hounded out of there, too, though, right?
I was surprised. When I first heard this story, I thought it was, like, outside the restaurant. But there were, like, people inside, like, yelling at her. And it's just like...
Yeah, and that happened with Weinstein as well, though, too. There's that footage of him getting...
Right,
you know, and if you're out in public, people are going to go for you. So.
It's... Of all
restaurants, too, a Mexican restaurant, like, it's almost like some nerve. Oh, we'll keep your food, but you can keep your people. Although
Cursed Jen Nielsen, there was that bizarre J in the middle of Kirsten.
Kirsten.
But yeah, that was a bizarro show. I mean, it's strange how where we are now from where we started the week, where it was like full on defensive mode, where they had to, and I guess it was kind of a sign. And you mentioned Melania and Ivanka being sort of moderating influence.
That's my guess, because he doesn't change his mind often or easily, right?
I seriously doubt Ivanka. I have extraordinary doubts about how much Ivanka's in Trump.
But I mean, there was a point too. I mean, everybody was pounding on the fellow Republicans. Laura Bush came out against.
I think the more damning thing is what happened on Monday, where they flew Christian Nielsen from New Orleans to the White House to do the press, and they postponed the White House daily press briefing 4 hours so that they could have her appear at the podium. And I think that's the more damning, is I think that there's this, because of this, there's a schism in the White House staff.
Oh, yeah.
It is a type of chaos that Trump doesn't like. We know that Trump likes chaos, but Trump likes to be the chaotician. But this was creating a serious divide in his administration. I think Sarah Huckabee Sanders did not want to stand at that podium that day and answer a ton of questions about this policy.
She's gone full spicy, right? Like, I don't want to.
Yeah. It's not that she's found a conscience. It's because she doesn't. She's kind of sick. And, of course, there were rumors at the end of last week that she's counting down to the days where she's bailing. So all that put together. But the Ivanka Trump thing, especially Ivanka Trump, because in the past, her and Jared Kushner have bailed when things are bad at the White House, like Charlottesville, the massive collapse of the repeal of the Obamacare efforts, when like the White House infighting was really bad before John Kelly was made chief of staff. They both like got the heck out of Dodge.
A lot of that to do was to do with Bannon
Ivanka's already sort of been taken to town because of, some of her tenured, remarks on social media, with that picture she posted that got Sam B into trouble. I'm highly skeptical anyone's listening to Ivanka.
Yeah, but he obviously listened to somebody, because the 180 was unbelievable. We go from, what did he say? He was just firing off all this stuff. He's like,
oh my goodness,
the kids are Trojan horses for the worst criminals on earth. So it's like every single person that comes to that border and all their children. Now, I mean, that's
Trump
not to say that
there aren't horses.
Yeah. He saw the Monty Python, the Trojan Rabbit.
More like the Brad Pitt, Troy.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Donald Trump ain't sitting down to watch Monty Python.
No, probably not. This is supposed to be funny. I don't know what's going on. Trojan horses for the worst criminals on earth. And then he got stuck into Europe's policy on refugees that he called a big mistake. And there's a lot of parallel things happening this week, including I just heard briefly today about Hungary's policy that you can't even pretty much talk about migrants and refugees, or they'll haul you in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how strict they're going. It's not just we've closed the border, we're not letting anybody in. So you can't, if you're helping them or anything of that nature, you're in trouble. But that's a totally different story. But something
right.
else.
Well, there was that thing on the weekend with the boat full of migrants in the Mediterranean, and Italy wouldn't take them, and Malta wouldn't take them, and they eventually had to go to Spain, and Spain said, "Oh, right, yeah,
right.
I guess."
But socialist government. That's why.
Yeah.
But and then something else parallel that happened to this too was the U.S. pulling out of the UN Council.
Oh yeah, the Human Rights.
The Human Rights Council.
Yeah.
A cesspool of political bias, as they called it, which means everyone on it disagreeing with the U.S. And what was the other comment that they were, that the council ignores atrocities in other countries? I don't know. Maybe this is to kind of escape.
Well, I mean, that's
the censure of people who are looking at what's going on their southern border and saying, really? And then, of course, all the memes that come out about, making the comparisons to every single incident through time, a lot of which took place in the U.S. as well, of children being taken away from their parents. And then the inevitable Nazi comparison, which seemed to be sort of the last thing that surfaced. And then it changed like that.
The UN human rights thing. I mean, there's a classic conservative argument about, well, you got people like Saudi Arabia that are part of it. And
America's
not an unfair argument, because, yes, there are places in the world that have terrible human rights records. But the point is, they're at the table, and you can deal with people at the table. in a way that you can't deal with them when they're not at the table. So, I mean, this is another one of those things where the Trump administration is making reality all these fever dreams of, like, really hardcore conservatives, like C-plus Santa Monica fascist Stephen Miller,
yeah,
who once famously, you know, ran in the middle of a women's track meet to show that men are faster than women, and ran for student government on a platform of the janitors aren't working hard enough and we shouldn't have to pick up after ourselves. But I mean, that was the, if there's like one person who's been like holding court at like saying this is the way it should be, and I think to go back to the whole White House intrigue of it, is this is kind of a refutation of him and his policies and his ideas, because according to people inside the White House, he's been loving it. He's been loving the pictures of, you know, tortured kids being taken away from their parents and children crying, and you know, he's 32 years old and he looks like Nosferatu. It's
oh yeah, I saw that one.
It's kind of bizarre. I mean, just you know, if there's a living portrait of Dorian Gray, it is Stephen Miller. But yeah, I think the I mean, this isn't solved by any stretch either.
Oh no, and I think
he signed an executive order. There, I mean, this goes through a lot
great.
Of Trump's.
It's going to be fine.
Yeah, I mean, this goes through a lot of Trump's scandals where there's like multiple levels of it. But he signed this executive order, which is definitely going to be challenged in court because there are laws and rules that, you know, you can't hold people and kids in detention longer than 20 days. And this opens the door to holding kids indefinitely because you can hold adults indefinitely. And then he's on TV today with his cabinet. Saying, like, oh, yeah, like, out of the 12,000 kids, maybe 2,000 of them are, like, you know, here with their families. The rest are the Trojan horses, as you will, like, being used by human traffickers and drug smugglers and all that. Or they're here by themselves or older kids. And I'm like, where are you pulling these statistics from?
And that's it. Because we know those things do go on. But to what degree? It's not everybody coming to the border, right?
No.
And CBC made a point that it didn't really slide on the radar, but I read it and then I went back to read it again, and that article had kind of changed a bit, talking about how there are a number of minors detained in Canada with their parents here as well. I believe the number was something like 150. And we also have this situation up here. It's obviously not the flood of people that they have in the U.S., where there are minors up here that have just appeared for, you know, for various reasons, are in Canada, and they're being held in detention as well. So there was this big outcry, like, oh, what is the Canadian reaction going to be? What's our government's reaction going to be? And I don't know if it was a bit more muted, not necessarily from all, you know, I would say all sides. It wasn't a unified. Was it Jenny Kwan of the NDP who really let it fly this week? Like, what?
Yeah.
Trudeau was a bit more muted, I think, but obviously he, you know, everyone, or not everyone, most people think this is a disgrace, but yet, you know, we have our own little secret detention center in Quebec that no one wants to talk about. So
that's the flip side of this, is that America's dealing with an influx of people from Mexico and Central America, while their policies are driving, excuse me, people to our border and coming over our border, mostly people of African descent or from the Caribbean
In Haiti,
Had, you know, some sort of legal status that has since been revoked. So, I mean, he's just creating problems on both sides of the country with all this. In the meantime, there was a poll that released that said 75% of Americans now approve of immigrants, or they think immigration is a good thing, which is the highest it's ever been. So it means he's appealing to a smaller and smaller subsect of the American public, 19% who think it's bad, and that means, like, legal immigration is bad. And of course, that's the thing he's him and Jeff Sessions and Stephen Miller, all these guys, are working for, which is they were taking these kids as hostages to build the stupid wall, number one, and then get assurances from Congress to ramp down legal immigration. So it just seems like a very bad week. And again, not to revisit the point, but it is curious about what the change was. And I think the change was spurred not necessarily by someone finding a morsel of humanity in Donald Trump, because I don't think it exists. But it's it's a matter of like him trying to find some sort of easy win. And there was an article I was reading, I think it was on Vox, that it was just like, the point is that this entire episode proves is that even after a year and a half, Donald Trump is still ill-prepared in terms of knowledge on legal affairs, constitutional affairs, social affairs, foreign affairs, to really address things properly. Because the key, I think, and I may be wrong, but the key, I think, to dealing with this is to attack the root cause, which is why are so many people from Central America willing to risk life and limb and being separated from their children to get away from places like Honduras and El Salvador, because they feel their lives are in peril. Would not be the more direct approach would be to, like, maybe we should find a way to make sure these people can feel safe at home.
Yeah.
Because Central America's been largely ignored in American foreign policy. It's at least since 9/11. And I think that's a piece of this that we don't talk about.
But there used to be, like, deep involvement.
Sure.
The Contras, I mean, you name it, right? But that's probably for another day.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's 1 hour spotlight on American imperialism. No. It's on my other show that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
The one that exists in my mind.
Well, you know what? After a topic that heavy, you just need to chill out and spark a blunt. And in a couple of months, we can do it. October 17th.
Join the Space Force without leaving your chair.
Absolutely. The Senate approved, and it got royal assent. It was a fancy royal assent ceremony this morning to sign this into law.
Did they smoke a big fat or no?
That did not happen.
Oh. Next time.
But, I mean, Julie Payette was there to sign it. Usually it's like somebody just taking the papers over to her house and getting her signed, or like one of the Supreme Court justices being there on her authority to sign. But they had like an actual signing ceremony, which is highly unusual for bills being passed by the Senate and getting assent. So you know this is
significant,
a big deal. Yeah.
And a good news story, I guess, for a lot of people.
Sure,
not everybody, but a ton. It's interesting that
I was going to say not for Andrew Scheer because he's not going to take advantage.
Well, so, at least that's what he says.
Oh man!
But I can't really speak for Andrew Scheer. And of course, the timeline has been extended. I think everybody thought it was going to be July 1st, but it's looking like October 17th, which was the day of the Russian Revolution, among other things. So I'm not sure why.
And as Mark McKinnon pointed out on Twitter, it's 5 days before the municipal election.
Ah. To make the election all the more interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they seem to do this pick a significant date thing. July 1st is popular, obviously.
Halfway through the year, they were
going to pick Labor Day, maybe, and they probably could have it wrapped up by Labor Day, but they're saying they've extended the timeline, or the runway, as I heard it called twice. We're extending the runway. Is this like new political speak?
Yes.
Extending the runway
so the
provinces can get it together in terms of getting the stores assembled. We've had two provinces in a territory at least pass their own laws. Quebec says they're going to stick with it about the 4 plants at home, which the feds were adamant that was going to be part of the rules. And there will definitely be a scrap over that. I'm thinking Supreme Court as to whether you can grow your own plants.
That was the big thing the Senate wanted out of there.
Yeah.
Was an allowance for that. And it was because
it's full of conservatives or... Oh, no, sorry. Everybody's independent now. Wink.
Well, there are conservative senators. One of them was Leo Hauskas, who said that it was about normalizing the use of marijuana, and setting a bad example for the kids. And it's like, you know, marijuana use is normalized. That's why it's being legalized now. If you want to get, if you want to get pot, you can find pot. It's not that hard.
That's not a problem.
Nobody's sitting around going, "Oh man,
I want to try
marijuana so bad. If only it wasn't illegal." No, yeah, but there's absolutely no one who's saying that.
I'm sure their experience on drug control is watching Reefer Madness or something like that. This is your brain on drugs. Supposedly, we're among the world's heaviest users. I didn't know that, but
That's what I mean. It's normal.
It's been normalized.
It's
now,
normal.
Mind you, Judy Wilson-Raybould is saying, "Now remember, everybody, that it's not legal yet, so don't jump the gun."
She's got a finger wave a little. It's fine.
What if you've got your 4 plants in your yard? What is going to happen? I think it would only be unless they want you for something.
Right.
If they want you for something else, they'll say, well, you've got marijuana. Like, it's classic police move. It's like, well, what's this? Oh, you've got some pirated CDs. Well, that's, you could get 3 years in jail for that. And that kind of, you know, not the good cop, the bad cop.
Well, I mean, that's
the
thing.
The good cop be like, hey, you got four plants.
If
right
it's a
on.
Legal plant,
yeah,
then you have to treat it like other legal plants that you grow, like herbs and vegetables and fruit. You know, if I grow strawberries in my garden, or if I grow tomatoes and I want to give you a couple of tomatoes so you have nice fresh garden grown tomatoes, then, you know, that shouldn't be, you know, that shouldn't be a big deal. Just as how, you know, and big farms that ship tomatoes to grocery stores, there are rules obviously because of, you know, industrialized farm processes and all that. And
yep.
But I mean, on the ground level, it just makes sense. If this is a legal plant and I can plant illegal plants in my garden, you know, not hurting anyone, then that's the attitude. It should be treated just like tomatoes or cucumbers or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, what's going to happen if you have five? They want the person that has 200, and I think they've cracked down on people from the medicinal crowd who are like, yeah, you can grow this much, and the guy had his whole apartment and his balcony just covered in plants. It's like, give somebody an inch, they'll take all the inches.
But those people are few and far between.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, we're Canadians and reasonable about these things, right?
And anyone who gardens knows that if you want to grow like four plants, a squirrel's going to eat at least two.
Yeah, at least Guelph squirrels who eat anything. I think they're mostly raised on pizza.
So it's like, again, it's the same thing. Like, if I'm going to grow four tomato plants, I'm going to probably plant a dozen seeds because that's the only way I'll get four.
Well, and that's the thing too. I had this discussion with someone about, you know, as far as growing marijuana is concerned, and I'm an agricultural graduate, and I'll just say that to cover my butt, they're male and female plants, and you need to determine, you know, you want the female ones because they have buds on them. So if you're planting seeds, you plant four, the odds are as good that you'll get four plants that have no bud on them. So how do you decide? Or do you have to, this all has to play out.
Well, you also have to get the pollinators in there and get the bees to.
Well, that should be a problem in Guelph now. We're crawling with pollinators.
Well,
pollinators
we're a bee city now.
Which
or
is
we
great.
Will be us on Monday.
The bees are definitely going to be happy with this setup. So, but yeah, I didn't realize the pot market, according to the government, is $7 billion illegal market that they want a cut of.
Yeah,
will the cut be $7 billion? It'll actually probably be higher, I think. Now, my hope from all of this is that we've legalized pot, and we've got that out of the way, and there's a couple things that happen with that. I think I mentioned this before. There's been a couple studies out of the states saying that the use of illegal opioids or street drugs goes down when marijuana is legalized in a place. And we have now, obviously, a whole country where that's happening. But I think what has to happen, and I hope some of the good that will come out of this from the revenue that this is going to generate, which is huge, will be, and I hope there is a percentage being put towards programs to deal with things like the absolute out of control hold that opioids has on a certain set of the population, in particular what we've seen in Guelph in recent years, let's say. Because if that doesn't come out of this, then I think it's a lost opportunity. I mean, they'll just get all revenue and be like, well, we have this money, so we'll do this with it. It needs to be, I think it needs to be applied to the, let's call it the drug cycle or the drug, it's not even the drug cycle, you know what I mean? You got to apply it to something to alleviate the other issue.
Well, yeah.
Big issue.
I think that's one of the unanswered questions in all this is...
Or is it just general revenue? You know, is it like, well, we're not getting any revenue from oil, so why don't we just get...
yeah. Right. Are we going to invest in
marijuana
oil?
Yeah.
The other unanswered question is what's going to happen. And I tried to find out, you know, if there's been any of the amendments that were added had to do with deleting the criminal records of people who have been charged with having possessed a small amount of marijuana, or maybe charged with selling marijuana, or if any of these like crimes that are basically going to be legal as of October 17th. And there's nothing. And the tricky part is, and I found this in a report on Global about, you know, why you can't just, you know, go into the federal database and hit delete on all the people charged with possession of marijuana. It's because You are not charged with marijuana possession. You're charged with drug possession. And most of the time, police don't note what drug you were charged with possessing.
Hmm.
So it's a much bigger project than just going in there and hitting delete. But it's a big problem that's going to have to be dealt with.
And they have to let anybody go that's been charged with having a couple of doobies on them. They have to.
But I mean, the record's still going to be there too.
Well, and that has to be expunged or purged or whatever.
Well, I mean, they have no idea how that's going to be done, and there's been no mechanism set up about how we're going to review.
So the first few billion dollars is probably going to be put towards that. And maybe some to the Phoenix payroll system or something else is busted, right? But you know what I mean? Like, it's...
Yeah.
This is the perils of having a bunch of money coming around and it's not tagged for anything, right? It's just general revenue, and that's a problem.
And, of course, the extra wrinkle in this is what's going to happen in Ontario, because Ontario has set up, like, an LCBO side organization, the OCRS, the Ontario Cannabis Retail Store... we know where the one in Guelph's going to be, where the old Deluxe painting store is on Stoner Road. I mean, Stone Road.
Somebody's putting an R on that sign.
Oh, yeah.
In the fall. The kids come back.
Across from Stoner Road Mall. But it's, yeah, so we know where that's going to be, but there's going to be 40 stores across Ontario. Doug Ford said he wants to, like, basically open up the market. We don't know what's going to happen with there. And I think Mike Schreiner, the new Guelph MPP, put out a press release earlier this week saying, like, hey, Doug, how about that opening up the retail market? So there could be some interesting developments coming out of there before October 17th. And it may end up being that...
Maybe that's why they've extended the runway.
Yeah, maybe. I know Ontario... was one of the three, Quebec, Ontario, and BC, were one of the three that wanted an extension.
Because I was in for the first time, it's happened to, what's the one on Queen Street in Toronto? Strange Paradise or Perfect Stranger? But it's been there for a lot of years.
Forever.
You can buy your paraphernalia.
Yeah.
I've never been in it, but I went in to ask a couple of questions about, so what are you guys doing? And I think it's shops like that established that are really hoping for a piece of this market. Not only them, I mean, maybe the Shortstop as well. Because, I mean, corner stores have a pretty significant lobby, right? Especially the chain ones.
Yeah.
And, if there's any, with cigarettes down, you want any piece of the market that you can get, right? So it's probably the perfect marriage of, marijuana and the munchies. But if that's the case, if they open up the corner stores to that, then they have to open them up to booze. They absolutely have to. You can't have one without the other, right? Have I got it right that the age is 18?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that doesn't make any sense either.
I'd have to double check, but I think...
It's like marijuana is 18, but booze is 19.
I think it might be 19, actually. I'm not, at least in Ontario. I'm not 100% sure.
So my criteria was always that if they can put you in a boat and send you to Juneau Beach, you should be able to do everything, right? So whatever that age is... that you don't have to lie. But anyway, that's okay. For another day.
I'm going to Google that, and then as we take a break, and we're going to play some music and come back and talk about Monsieur Ford and all the wonderful things he has planned for Ontario. It's really quite exciting if you don't want to have pizza at your meetings. Anyway.
Just Trocadero. We only want
Trocadero. Yeah. That'd be a great law. Only pizza Trocadero. All right, you're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Yeah, that was Peter Tosh from his album Legalize It. And that was the title track, Legalize It. I think we're getting the jump on...
it's been waiting in the vinyl library for decades for this day.
Got the jump on Nikki Dredd on this one. So from 1976. Wow, I guess that's considered a classic.
We should hide it on Nikki Dredd. teach him a lesson.
He probably has it on his device.
He probably does.
But yeah, so the late Peter Tosh's dreams have come true. That's a bit of an anthem, I think, for the Stoner class. So,
well, other
and
dreams,
all Canadians now.
Other dreams are coming true too. Like if you didn't want cap and trade to be a thing in Ontario,
well, I
your
hate that cap and trade.
Oh my goodness!
What an affront to people in Ontario.
So Doug Ford is the premier designate, and he's been busy going about.
It's like an executive order, isn't it? Like Parliament hasn't set yet, and he's like,
"I'm glad you pointed that out because there was this. There was the other thing earlier this week with the canceling all the green energy things, all the like all the energy efficiency rebate programs.
But that runs in tandem with this, though, right? Like we're there's a connection between the cash raised by this and the green programs, right?
Or I think yeah, that's what it's supposed to.
That would have been the tip off,
but. Nobody can, and this was written in the Ottawa Citizen, nobody can find out who issued that edict to cancel the rebate programs, because technically the present ministers are still the Liberal ministers.
Right.
But they're only really there to rubber stamp things or act in case of emergency until people are sworn in and named a cabinet, which of course hasn't happened yet for the PCs. So who's canceling rebate programs?
Cory Tonek.
Oh, jeez.
Probably.
I worry that's the answer.
Well,
but yeah, Doug Ford came out and said we're getting a cap and trade, and he's going to be exploring all legal options to make sure we don't have to impose a carbon tax. Yawn. Although that was music to Scott Moe's and Jason Kenney's ears. And then
he sighs.
And then he comes out and says he's putting a hiring freeze on all government workers, with the exception of frontline staff like police officers, corrections officers, fire services, and even nurses and teachers as well. So pretty much just
Teachers as well. I missed that one. I heard nurses. Teachers.
So pretty much just the bureaucrat class, the middle manager class.
No, but also like people that work here.
Yeah.
That aren't necessarily sunshine listers.
Right. And then he's canceling the perks. No more free newspapers. No more cookies at your meetings. No more expense, things. Free and coffee.
This is an echo of what happened at Toronto City Hall when Brother Rob was mayor. Brother Rob. They got rid of this. You would hope at a 12-hour meeting, what the heck? What was that meeting here? It was 13 hours or something, right?
That there would be the whole meeting?
Yeah.
Yeah, that 12 hours, 10 hours, actually.
Yeah. Anyway, 10 hours. It's still like in addition to your regular day.
It wasn't short, in other words.
You have another 10 hours. You'd hope for a sandwich and maybe like an apple juice or something, right? But they did this in Toronto City Hall, too. It's like, you people are abusing the system. And then Doug, Rob, well, they were working in tandem because Doug was the deputy mayor in his mind, right?
In his mind, yeah.
Get rid of the sandwich platters. Like, I'll get pizza for everybody out of my own pocket. How many times can you knock back the carbs at a meeting like that before you're just like, everybody's just like lumping and falling asleep, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, thanks, Rob. I mean, I don't think it's
Doug.
Thanks, Ford Brothers. Thanks, Brother Rob and Brother Doug for giving them all the carbs. Yeah, so it sounds like it's going to be the same. He's borrowed that page from the... from Metro.
Oh yeah, sure. I mean it's
and does the optics are good. It's like, but are the champagne lunches really going on anymore? There was definitely a time because I witnessed it once about 20 years ago. Different regime, wink. It was unreal what these people were putting back. Government people. I won't say any more than that, but I think that has changed for sure with the times. Especially with the drinking, so it's a feel good thing for the it's red meat for the people that elected.
Well, I mean that's it. It is
Doug
red meat. It's purely about message politics.
Yeah,
and in the meantime, it's hard. You're not talking about a huge expense either. These are like just really basic expenses.
Yeah. But the big wrench is into
like
the
for a pot of coffee and some donuts and things just to help get you through, and like it gives you a reason to get up and walk around the meetings. But the thing that
it seems petty.
it seems petty, but then he has his caucus meeting. He's like, I bought pizza for everyone out of my own pocket. And it's like, I'm sorry.
Thank you, millionaire.
What is the message here? That you now have to have a lot of disposable income to be part of government? It's like, I understand.
Yeah, actually, that's
you don't
a good
like
point.
People eating pizza on the taxpayers' dime. Blah, blah, blah. But it's... But, I mean, that's part of the thing, though, is if you're having people sitting there for, like, 10-hour meetings or 12-hour meetings or running from meeting to meeting, it's part of the thing. It's part of the expense account. Every place has – like, most places have an expense account. It's okay.
It doesn't have to be special, right? But
– it's like a minuscule perk, but it's not like the champagne lunch things.
No.
So you have a copy of the Toronto Star lying around your freaking office. You know, who cares?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
The biggest paper in the province. Maybe you should have it lying around.
But he hates the hatred for the Toronto Star, right? Daniel Dale and Robin Doolittle and all those people. I can't wait to see the film, actually, that's going to come out. But although they've changed Robin Doolittle to a man, we are getting completely sidetracked. We should talk about...
No, that's not based on Rob Ford. Or no, it's not about Rob Ford. It's based on Rob Ford.
Based on true events.
You know, the thing that galls me about that
Bob
is...
Bob Flood. No.
You know what galls me about that is... They have Nina Dobrev as one of the mayor people working in the mayor's office.
Oh.
And you know who'd have made a perfect Robin Doolittle in a Rob Ford movie? Nina Dobrev. But that's – I said that on end credits, so I'll say it here too. Okay. Back to the actual Ford
Cap
in question
trade.
Now.
The big wrench into the works.
The breaking news today was he was in Pickering announcing that the nuclear plant there was going to stay open through 2024.
Yeah, because the license is up, right?
Right.
August.
Right, so they're gonna keep that open, but then somebody asked him about transit because, of course, the big news is in Toronto is the topic we're gonna be talking about next, and he's like, "I see us having subways from Markham and Pickering going into downtown," and you're like, "What are you talking about? Because there are GO trains in Markham and Pickering going to downtown Toronto, you idiot!"
He just
there.
Says,
I got that out of my system.
Wow.
But it's
and he just said subways so many times when he was with Metro Council that
but he's like, we're going to have rapid transit underground. And somebody actually did the math online. And like, you know, the
$40 billion
hole. Takes you to travel from one end of the Bloor Danforth line to the other is about 90 minutes,
yep.
Which is exactly the length of time it would take you to travel by subway in terms of distance from Pickering or Markham into downtown Toronto, which is also, by the way, the current runtime for the GO train that runs from Markham and Pickering into downtown Toronto.
Which,
so what are you even talking about?
And GO trains are actually within the province's purview, whereas subways are the city, right? There's
but
really
just,
nothing to do. I mean, the province does fund them. I think the feds give him some money, too, but it's...
It's just like... But it's part of this thing where he was calling light rail an antiquated system.
They have it in for light rail. I know it's because the shopkeepers are like, our street was closed for 2 years, and it's your fault.
Right, that was the big political piece of political theater that Doug Ford was famous for before becoming a PC leader was... you know, being part of that King Street protest and flipping the bird to the streetcars that went by. Oh, congratulations, you're being mean to streetcars. Awesome.
But the killing off cap and trade, or at least the attempted killing off cap and trade, which, as you said, may create a carbon tax. And this is that he kept going on and on about the carbon tax. The carbon tax does not exist.
No, it was cap and trade.
He even had that little... You know, the little things that they put on the podium that says, you know, axe the carbon tax or whatever. It's like... No, actually, what you're doing is going to create the carbon tax. And the corporate friends have spoken up. Enbridge and Suncor are seeking clarity into what the heck's actually going to happen
right.
in Ontario because supposedly the pollution credit market. And I didn't know this. $2.8 billion, and if there are other people invested in the cap and trade market as well, it is a capitalist mechanism. Don't you know?
And trade is the conservative answer to climate change.
Nobody
it
should
has
be under
always
it.
Been.
Yeah, and it won't do anything. But that's just my opinion. You know, you've created a market out of garbage, but another story as well. But you know, at least they had that, and that the money was going to get plowed into the initiatives that have been, you know. Killed off as well, the heat pumps, insulation, new windows, all of that's done. And that, you know, the window companies are running around trying to get things done. I actually saw Ben Pauly on, it must have been on CBC or maybe CKCO talking about what he does in terms of like super energy efficient houses made mm-hmm. of straw bales, what have you. Mm-hmm. Not always. And he's like, this is you know, upset everything.
Yeah.
But then of course it's like, well, those people shouldn't get a handout. And this is like a small businessman, right? Small business person doing what they do and trying to green up the province. So we don't need to consume as much energy. And yet now
the thing of it though is these were popular programs.
Yeah.
And it's not like people are getting their renovations paid for. They're getting a rebate. It's like any number of rebates you get where you get like $5 off or $10 off.
The light bulb one was amazing for a while. The LED light bulb one, you can LED light bulb for a buck.
You know, the toilet replacements, yeah. The low flow things, rain barrels. I mean, every little bit helps. And you can make an argument, sure, that how much does it really help? But I mean, on the other side, what does it really hurt?
Well, if every toilet did it, right.
Yeah, and somebody said it's the low hanging fruit of sort of the green economy is to go after these rebate programs.
Things you think you'll never say if every toilet. I don't know where that came from.
So I mean, at the end of the day, you know, when he's talking about cutting gas taxes and all it is going to be, you know, increasing spending and some. While he's going after like the nickel and dime stuff, like cookies at meetings and coffee at meetings and free newspapers.
Populist rubbish, in my opinion. But I think Mike Schreiner is going to be a busy fella.
If he's not already, he's pretty
busy. He's definitely, but even busier in terms of being, you know.
That's a good segue because we are not 100% sure, but we're like 90% sure he's going to be here on our show next week.
For his regular bit, no.
For his first open sources appearance after winning the election. I mean, in studio, we talked to him on election night. But.
And everybody knows that he won because he was on the show a lot, right? Dude called the open sources effect. This is happening.
Well, we called it the open sources bomb. Nobody else was calling it the open sources bomb.
We will. No, it's always great to have Mike in whatever capacity.
Yeah,
and he's.
I mean, it's interesting times.
We'll hit him up with the green questions.
Because I've been getting a lot of Green Party press releases about every time Doug Ford announces something, there's a Green Party press release that counters it. It's pretty interesting. Anyway,
great that they're on top of it.
Yeah. So speaking of Toronto, it's been getting a lot of attention lately that it's pretty dangerous on Toronto's streets. And have you ever been in Toronto? It's pretty easy to see why with your own two eyes. But a coalition of people are coming together with a list of proposals to make Toronto streets safer. About 18 people, cyclists and pedestrians, have been killed so far this year. Almost 100 have been killed in the last 2 years since John Tory, who you may remember as the mayor of Toronto, announced this Vision Zero platform, which was to decrease the number of fatalities on Toronto streets, and they've more or less, I mean, I think they were down a few for 2017, but otherwise they've been fairly high year after year. You know, there's not too much of a difference year over year in terms of the number of fatalities. The Toronto police figures are not as high as the ones that the Toronto Star gathered, that 93 number. Because the Toronto Police doesn't count fatalities on private property or on the 400 series of roads, which is technically OPP jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. But
and no one should be on a 400 series road on their bicycle or walking, but it does happen. But
right,
yeah,
or somebody gets out of their car because they're mm-hmm. you know they've pulled over to the side or what have you for whatever reason. But it's
Well, and this is the thing too. I mean. The latest memorial, there was a ghost bike put in place yesterday for Dahlia Chacko, whose grandma was killed by a flatbed. There were three in the past week, and she had her helmet on, and mm-hmm. she was in the bike lane, and you think you're safe and secure.
Yeah.
And then killed outright. Now, I think I've told this story before, but it was a number of years ago. The very first time I set out on my bicycle from Lakeview to Toronto, when the trail was open, but it's part of it, you still had to go onto the Lakeshore Road, I got hit by a car. Mm-hmm. I wasn't wearing a helmet. I thankfully landed safely. But, you know, I was going to say this isn't a new story because cyclists and pedestrians have always had to contend with, you know, the older section of the city, the newer section of the city, people with rage issues and all kinds of stuff. I know there's a lot of blame the cyclist, blame the pedestrian out there, but if that is your vehicle, people have to respect you. And it's easy enough for me to sit here and say that, but Kiesmatt made the point, and Richard Florida too. He called it Toronto's pretty much in a state of emergency, and the killing fields, I think, was one of the phrases used as well. And you said that Kiesmatt had also said, 44 dead by SARS.
Yeah.
It's a national emergency, but 100 pedestrians and cyclists killed. And it's like, well,
I almost said a bad word, but stuff happens.
Well, yeah. No, you're right. I wouldn't fault you for saying that,
but it's ridiculous. I can't remember who. I think it might have been Ford.
Probably.
Not Doug Ford, but the Robert Ford who you mentioned. Said something to that, it's similar to what you see in the United States with gun deaths, being so out of control. I mean, not in terms of scale, but in terms of tragedies that can be avoided and mitigated. But I think the problem is also the same, is that even well-meaning politicians like John Tory, who says he has some sleepless nights given all the people that have been killed in these fatalities, yep. They do not want to go after the car drivers, because then that sparks, because the majority of people do drive, and nobody wants to be thought as part of a class of people causing death, even if they are ones acting safe and responsibly with the device in question, whether that is a gun or whether that is a car.
Yeah, and it's the easy default populist thing to use that well-worn phrase, the war on the car. Mm-hmm. And the current advocate of that line of thinking is Giorgio Mammoliti.
Mammo.
Formerly George Mammoliti, formerly NDP and union guy, as I never fail to mention. I do not believe bicycles should be on the roads at all, he says.
Amazing.
Which is just weird. You can have opinions about bikes and where they should be and where they shouldn't be, but to say they shouldn't be on the road at all is just really strange. And maybe that's he did it so we would talk about him. I don't know.
Well, he
is the exception rather than the rule, but he was tight with Ford Brothers, who also had some issues. I really want to see, I saw a promo for it. Maybe you know a bit more about it. I think it was on TVO. Jagmeet Singh and Doug Ford riding around on bicycles. You know anything about this?
That was some agenda sub series about getting.
I really want to see Doug Ford on the bike and what he actually says about having to ride around Toronto on a bicycle when you're thrown into it.
Right.
Because it is a messy place to cycle. They have made some improvement. Last I was in Toronto and saw the bike lane on Bloor, I was really impressed with it. But obviously, as I mentioned about that woman that was killed most recently, it didn't help her.
No.
So there are lots of design things that can be done. There's all kinds of this. If I understand it right, this Vision Zero program or plan that John Tory had, they coughed up something like $90 million for it. So what has or hasn't? I haven't really heard of anything happening yet.
Well, I mean, I think it's gone in the same pile as Transit yeah. City.
And I guess you can earmark money, and it's like, well, we're going to do this. Because I keep seeing all these things. Why don't we do it like Copenhagen does? Or why don't we do it like Amsterdam does? But they don't, right?
I mean, that's easier said than done, sure. Though, right? Because of the nature and the layout of Ontario, which has been for like 60, 70 years very car-centric. It's hard to switch off. I appreciate that there's a point of view that's hard to switch off, and we see a lot of that in Guelph here, which is Guelph's a very car-centric town. But whenever we talk to people, or I talk to people about, how do we get people out of cars, that's always one of my questions. It's like, how do we get people out of cars? Because nobody wants to be the person who's like, okay, I will get out of my car and take transit. I will make that sacrifice. There's kind of nobody who's going to do that. Because the default is, if I can get in a car, and if I can get a car, if I can afford a car, I'll take a car. Because otherwise, I'm sitting on a bus or a subway train or something.
Or go train into Toronto for your Toronto job so you can live in Guelph.
Right.
And I believe that was the whole point of the GO trains here, was to, have that integrated system where you live in the condo here and then you commute to your Toronto job to pay for it. I don't think that's really transpired. I still think there's a lot of people, particularly if you live in the south end of this town, mm-hmm. are you going to trail into town to get onto the GO train?
Right.
Or are you just going to get in your car?
You're putting yourself in the hands of Guelph Transit, especially in the early morning. And then on top of that, if you're maybe not willing to do that, you may want to drive into downtown, but where are you going to park all day downtown Guelph? I don't know.
Yeah, and we probably have to
and
do.
That's why I was like, when they were talking about putting a GOAT station like where the Lafarge site is, that made sense to me because there's it's a big open field. You can put a parking lot in. You can
People drive, whether people like it or not, people drive to the GO train.
Right.
If you've seen any of those parking lots on the Lakeshore line, and I grew up kind of near one, it's like the car, but you know, is it not better for the car to go 5K than the 40K into Toronto, whatever the heck it is, 20, it's 23K from Lakeview. But there's also a massive number of people who cycle to the GO train. And the fact that you can take your bike on a GO train, I'm saying now, I know it's been around for years, but...
Well, I mean, it's relatively...
Going back to the day I got hit, I wanted to take the train home because I didn't want to ride my broken bike. And they're like, you can't bring that on here. So we have had some changes in terms of where bikes can go.
You can take your bike on the GO bus, too.
Yeah, and on the front of any Guelph Transit bus, which I haven't done yet, but one of these days I'm going to do it just to do it. So there have been advances. We can't say it hasn't stopped, but how can there have been advances with this many people killed? Beyond cyclists, what was it? The stat for this year was 4 cyclists, but 18 pedestrians, which is even more mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. And the line you always hear, not it's like, oh, those cyclists, they all behave badly, and then this. I don't think that's completely accurate, because I got to say, I almost got smoked this morning at here at college in Gordon, having the light and having everything. But I because of things that have happened to me, I always kind of hesitate.
Yeah. So do I.
A couple of the significant accidents that we've had in town, fatalities on bikes over the years have been, you know, there's an assumption made that the bus is going to stop or the dump truck is going to stop, and it doesn't. And that absolutely has to change as well. But, you know, you can only throw so much at driver education, too, right? And they'll say, well, all the cyclists are misbehaving. They're on the sidewalk. It's like, well, would you not ride on the sidewalk if you thought that you were going to get taken out by a flatbed? I would. When I lived in Mississauga, I rode on the sidewalk all of the time. And I'm like, go ahead and ticket me because there's nowhere for a bicycle to be.
Yeah.
Right? So we have to come to this great compromise and say, okay, this is where the bikes can go. I'm a firm believer in bikes needing dedicated lanes. Because, and I know a bike has every right to be in the road, and there's that 1 meter rule and all that jive, but who, honest to God, who is going to pull over 1 meter into the other lane, essentially, in lots of places, to give the bike room?
It's so, and I find it here in Guelph, drivers so aggressive, and, you know, on places like Paisley Street, where it's two lanes, and the bus pulls over, and people will drive around the bus. And I'm surprised there hasn't been some sort of accident yet. There's some car trying to drive around the bus, and the bus pulling out after picking somebody up.
There probably has. It just hasn't been fatal. And that's, you know, you hear more always about fatalities than actual, than just incidents. And there's lots and lots and lots. And some of them get reported, and some of them don't. But I think that, I hate to say it, but I think the Toronto, the GTA... the road rage mentality has spread up here over the past however many years in terms, you know, now that we're getting more intensified population-wise, it really has. And it's noticeable. People that have lived here for a long time, people that have lived here all their lives will all say the same thing, is that now we have this kind of, that, you know, the car, I mean, there's always been cars in Guelph. Obviously, you look at any old picture, it's not like we were, you know, horse and buggy up until recently, right? But with population growth, it's all about the car.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a war on the car in Guelph? I don't think so, but
I've always say that I would love to have a war on the car. I would love.
I remember
it
you saying because it's
because then like a debate is actually happening. But now you get, you know, there's this piece of legislation, the Protecting Vulnerable Road Users Act, which did not. It was a private member's bill, but did not get passed in the last session of Queen's Park. It is being championed by Catherine Fife, is returning to Queen's Park. She was reelected a couple of weeks ago in Waterloo. And it basically increases the fines and increases the penalties if you're caught, you know, violating the rules of the road, running red lights and things. The question is, are they going to find a receptive audience for that at the new Queen's Park under Premier Doug Ford, who has used the words war on car before?
Yeah. Many times.
And I think a lot of people are highly skeptical.
Hopefully she'll bring that back in the new session.
Oh, she said she has. She will.
Excellent.
So there you go. So that's it for this week. And you may remember us mentioning Mike Schreiner will be likely in next week, and we're going to keep you updated on that. You can go to opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter, and you can listen to this or previous episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. I am found on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com, and no Space Force address yet, but it's coming.
When Scotty's stationed on Mars, he'll still be doing Spannerbook. You can stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we will be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more open sources, and we will see you then.